This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and each week I join Layla Mudin, who's the nutritionist I work with at my practice here in Manhattan, and we answer your questions. Your questions can come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. That's the email address for questions. And we got a lot of questions, so let's tackle some questions here in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
We've got a great one from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I love your podcast and I've heard you both mention many times the microbiota and how these little guys can affect health, mental health, and I've also read articles about the role they play. It seems like they're the ones in charge and we are here to make sure they have something to eat.
That's right. You know, so, if we're looking for a purpose in life, we are just humble servants of our microbiome. And it's our job to keep them happy because they, in turn, will keep us well and happy. So, you know, if you don't accomplish anything, you know, say you have a day and it's like, I didn't do anything today. I watched the news. I brushed my teeth. I, you know, ate some food. I took some probiotics. I didn't get anything done. Hey, you fostered a healthy microbiome.
There you go.
That was your purpose
That's
in life.
That's great. That was your purpose. Yes. At least on this day, absolutely. So, Jean asks, is it known what foods are favored by what microbes? If we eat too much of one kind of food or prebiotic supplement, would we get less diversity in the population of those bacteria? And is there anything else besides antibiotics that will harm the microbiota?
Okay.
This is a whole podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. And in fact, yesterday, in addition to cultivating my microbiome. I didn't do very much because I was waiting for my voice to recover. I started working on a presentation that I'm going to do at NYU. I was invited to do a presentation at NYU Langone on the microbiome as part of it's a public lecture series. I'll let people know for individuals in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. It'll be in January.
Terrific.
Way in January, like January 29th. But I started working on it now. And so there's so much happening in this field. And I will say, first and foremost, you know, issue a caution, which is that we don't know enough. You know, some of these questions are, you know, what's the optimal food? What's the optimal diet? We don't know. And it may be different strokes for different folks. What we do know is that diversity is important. Let's hear it for diversity. You know, now you turn on any sitcom and, you know, you got the gay guy or the gay gal, you know, the gay couple, you got you got black, brown, yellow, white, you know, every permutation. So we want diversity, you know, we got the Latinos and, you know, everybody's got to be in that mix, Asians, et cetera. So, diversity in the gastrointestinal tract is also crucial. And they discovered is that, you know, one of the few pristine, unperturbed tribes left in the world, the Hazda of Africa, and there are very few of them left, and they're, you know, civilization is encroaching. And they probably met more anthropologists than they'd care to meet because, you know, that meeting is going to change their culture. But they're often studied as examples of hunter-gatherers or the way we were, 10 or 15,000 years ago before civilization. And when they look at their poop under the microscope, they have, they do DNA analysis, which is the newer technique. they have the most diverse poop of anywhere in the world. And
wow.
And they're generally pretty healthy. They don't have a long lifespan because life is tough. Because, you know, when you're an elderly Hazda, which means you're over 50, you know, you slow down a little bit. You may not be able to keep up with the rigors of life. You know, there's no mm-hmm. Medicare. There's no, you know, there's no, mm-hmm. you know, air conditioning, heating, and the food supply is unreliable a little bit. So, and there's germs. So anyway, right. the point being, you know, what are the ingredients to go into? Well, they eat a very high fiber diet. They also, have, you know, when talking about the hygiene hypothesis, they're eating, a lot of, you know, they eating
stuff
bacteria,
out of the soil,
stuff out of the soil. Yeah. And, so,
and that's, you know, soil-based probiotics have gotten even more and more popular.
Yes.
Spore-based probiotics, you know, it's equivalent to going out in your garden, grabbing that cucumber, wiping it off on your shirt, and taking a bite.
Right.
Or something like that. So that could be a reason for all the diversity of their microbiota. And getting all that fiber, there's a lot of fibrous foods that are very, prebiotic supplements as well.
Sure. So among them,
asparagus,
I think
onion,
some of the best, mm-hmm. you know, asparagus, leeks have been shown to be very good.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about
Jerusalem artichoke.
Jerusalem artichoke mm-hmm. is excellent. You want to talk about resistant starch a little bit?
Resistant starch actually enhances the production of short-chain fatty acids that are also very, very good for colon health. And if they're getting all these fibrous vegetables and things, that's quite a bit of resistant starch, especially if they're getting some tuber-type right. starches. That could explain a lot in terms of having the benefits of those short-chain fatty acids, having a very healthy colon, good, healthy microbiota.
Right.
And, you
and,
know.
And that may also explain mm-hmm. some of the benefits of the paleo diet, because in the paleo diet,
yes.
you're allowed to have root vegetables, except in some cases, you mm-hmm. you know, they may restrict white potatoes for the nightshade family, but then you can have other starchy vegetables. But you don't have grain. And you don't mm-hmm. have flour. So you are getting starches, but the starches are really full of fiber. You're getting an enormous amount of fiber. And the fiber is food. You know, if some people think fiber is, oh, you know, it's like Metamucil, just like runs through you, it expands your stool volume. Fiber is food for the microbiome. The yes. bacteria in your intestine eat that. What's interesting, too, is, you know, talk about the benefits of coffee and the benefits of chocolate and the benefits of green tea. Some of their benefits may not come just directly with the chemicals being absorbed and going into our bloodstream and doing good things for our brains and our blood vessels and so on. Some of the benefits may be that it creates a healthier microbiome. Some of these substances mm-hmm. Alter the microbiome favorably. So cocoa flavanols as well as coffee bean, polyphenols, and EGCG, for example. These are actually prebiotics. Spices may have some of the same benefits in terms of, beneficially altering the intestinal environment, providing
yes.
good
yes.
food. These are called prebiotics because they mm-hmm. change your flora, not by introducing new bacteria, but by promoting the growth of healthy bacteria.
Yeah, the prebiotics essentially feed the probiotics
right.
or the beneficial bacteria. Now, things that would harm the microbiota, we know antibiotics are a big one.
Yes.
Because they come in, they're very good at wiping out the bad bacteria, but they also wipe out all the good microbiota, and then that sets the stage for other opportunistic bacteria to grow. But there are other things that can upset the microbiota. Too much sugar is going to feed the not-so-desirable microbiota. Alcohol intake can do the same. Having a very poor diet of additives, preservatives, and so forth can also damage the microbiota. So basically, they eat what we eat.
Right.
You know,
other things to include in that list. You may say, well, I'm not using any sugar. I'm using Coke Zero now. But it actually has been shown that the the non-caloric sweeteners disturb the microbiome. They damage the microbiome.
And that, so does the caramel color, the phosphoric acid, all the other ingredients in that kind of a product as well.
C-sections, lack of breastfeeding.
Things that can harm the microbiota, yes.
Yeah. I'm pulling up a slide that I'm developing for this podcast here, so I got a cheat sheet here. Chlorinated, fluoridated water.
And fluoridated water is just about everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's chlorinated to, you know.
Here's a big one.
Stavis.
Drugs like PPIs.
That's right.
Prilosec, Prevacid, Nexium. They damage the microbiome for sure. You know what it also does is stress. Stress actually can change the composition of your microbiome. It's interesting that you actually, your microbiome is responsible to some extent for your mood, but your mood also can alter the microbiome. It's a two-way street. Sedentary lifestyle can harm your microbiome. And I would also include GMOs among that because genetically modified foods may contain pesticide residues that are bactericidal, you know, that actually damage the bacterial population. So
we're basically eating pesticides by eating GMO foods because those crops are sprayed over and over much more than the actual natural or organic crop would be sprayed. So,
So those are basically the main ways we damage the microbiome.
Interesting stuff.
Also possibly with another one to include would be all the things that we put in our mouthwashes, that we put in our the antiseptic soaps that we use, antimicrobial products, the Lysol,
triclosan, antibacterial,
which was an ingredient in toothpaste, which you're going to inadvertently swallow some, and it will actually damage your microbiome because it. I mean, it's designed to kill all bacteria. Well, it's going to kill off the good ones as well as the bad ones. It doesn't distinguish.
And I think it's been pointed to as a carcinogenic as well.
Right.
The triclosan. So never buy antibacterial soap. Our microbiome is also using those antibacterial products like soaps and things and hand sanitizers. You're wiping out the good microbiota on your skin. It's not just our GI tract. So that's also very important to note.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. So a clean diet, avoidance of antibiotics anytime possible, good prebiotic and probiotic foods, a variety of different foods in your diet is also very, very helpful. Taking a good probiotic supplement, certainly.
Right. And per the person's discussion of a mono diet, a monotonous diet, you know, some people eat, you know, like four foods in a day. You know, they'll have, you know, meat, potatoes, corn, and, you know,
spinach
and some milk or something, you know, and it's just,
and some milk. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, boringly monotonous.
Yeah.
And then there's the role of live cultures too. You know, live cultures play a role. Kimchi is a good source, yogurt to some extent, kefir, you know, cultured products.
Right. So that's for the care and feeding of the guys in the gut.
And, of course, probiotics.
So eloquently puts.
You know, but one of the things about we answered many questions about probiotics is that it's different strokes for different folks. We don't know precisely which is the one-size-fits-all probiotic that is helpful for everyone because we're all genetically different. And we all have different health challenges.
Right. I mean, there are different probiotics, for example, for people with medical conditions like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, people with kidney stones, people with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, people with candida. I mean, there's all kinds of different...
But they purport to be helpful, but they're not. It's not quite ready for prime time in terms of how specifically targeted they are to those conditions. They're working on it.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. I was thinking primarily of a product like VSL3.
Yep.
For IBD or inflammatory bowel disease or something.
Right.
Yeah. Gene, thank you for your very, very thoughtful question. Okay. Oh. Here's a good one.
Good.
This comes from Meyer. Do we have time for another question?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Meyer
but
writes,
wait, you know what we should do is we should pause here because we want to allow one of our sponsors to share this message with our listeners. So here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this free podcast available to you as a resource. Okay, back to the question.
Okay.
From Meyer.
Yes, from Meyer. Meyer writes, I'm a 53-year-old man. I've gotten an annual blood test most of my adult life. I've perennially had low thyroid panel readings, although always within the reference range. I present with many symptoms of subclinical hypothyroid, yet neither my primary care physician nor endocrinologist, I've gone to two of them, are inclined to prescribe replacement. When I question why, I'm dismissed without a substantive answer.
Yep.
Is there any danger in trying thyroid therapy to see if my symptoms remit?
How old is Meyer? Did he say?
53.
53, okay.
He's 53.
So he's, I mean, it's not like he's, you know, a very elderly gentleman who might be at higher risk of cardiac arrhythmia. I mean, anyone could be given a cardiac arrhythmia if they're inappropriately given thyroid at too high a dose, but a 53-year-old who's in otherwise good health is a good candidate for thyroid replacement. Here's the deal, and I've written about this extensively, and many integrative doctors espouse this view, and that is that we're too stingy about doling out thyroid medication. It's kind of like the Holy Grail. You know, it's like no thyroid for you. You know, it's like you go to the endocrinologist and they're like,
thyroid Nazi.
The thyroid Nazi. You know, it's like, no thyroid for you. You say, yeah, but I'm tired. I got dry skin. My hair's thinning. I'm cold all the time, freezing. Everybody tells me, put on a sweater. I'm constipated. Yeah. But, you know, they say, just wait till your TSH goes up to 4, you know, and then maybe, you know, we'll give you some thyroid. Now, I'm not stigmatizing all endocrinologists with this because I see some of them now are getting with the program and they're recognizing that some people are so symptomatic that even with borderline thyroid, it's worth a try. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth a try also in cases of infertility. You know, I recently had a family member. She's having infertility issues. And finally, you know, she's a little borderline and they've been refusing her thyroid. I said, you know, why don't you go try it again and take another test and ask your OB and your, you know, if they could put you on a little thyroid. And they said, okay, this time we're going to do it. And, you know, it's helped another family member get pregnant. So I know the value of this.
Wonderful.
So, you know, the answer is, well, first of all, this dismissal thing, it's like, you know, don't you worry your little head. You know, you're just a patient. Where'd you get your medical degree? Stop reading all that stuff on the internet. We know better. And that's that paternalistic style of medicine that I so deplore. And, you know, I think what you need to do is get another opinion, get an opinion from an integrative physician. And if the problem with integrative physicians, and I got to say, and being an integrative physician, is sometimes they're too quick to prescribe thyroid inappropriately. And I've seen some patients who are put on massive doses of thyroid and it creates problems. And let's talk about the problems. What can happen? Well, I have one.
Osteoporosis.
Yep. We have a patient and maybe a couple of patients who seem like relatively healthy patients. There's no reason that at the age of 40 something, they should have bad osteoporosis, except that at one point in time, when they were younger, they went to an integrative doctor. The integrative doctor said, oh, you need like, you know, 3-4 grains of Arbor thyroid, which is a very high dose. And what I've done with those patients is I brought them down carefully, because you don't want to just stop them cold turkey, to a more reasonable dose. But the damage has been done, because it will prompt bone loss. The other thing it can do is it can enlarge your heart. It can cause you to have cardiac arrhythmias. That can be even dangerous or fatal. I mean, you can get a stroke from a cardiac arrhythmia. So there should be some cautions applied to prescribing thyroid. And the other thing about thyroid is it's a little bit like speed. And I think you encounter some of these patients who are trying to lose weight. They say, oh, you know, I was put on thyroid medication. My mother took me to a special doctor on, you know, Park Avenue when I was, you know, 12 years old because I was chubby, and he put me on thyroid medication. And that was inappropriate. And now they're off the thyroid medication. They have a hell of a time losing weight, right? It's a little bit like having been on amphetamines.
Yeah.
Because it's like being on speed.
You mean instead of Dextrotrim, they gave you thyroid?
Yeah. Well, that was in vogue.
Because that's another kind of speed.
Well, that was in vogue. It really was kind of in vogue in the 50s and 60s, is that, you know, if you were a young gal of a certain socioeconomic status in New York, you would get a nose job and you would go to a Park Avenue doctor who'd give you a thyroid because you were chubby. And it was kind of like a rite of passage. It really was a very prevalent thing. And, you know, endocrinologists are right to push back against thyroid as some panacea for weight loss, because it does help with weight, but it's often, you know, not the answer to weight problems. And if given inappropriately, can be harmful. So, you know, that's, I think, a pretty good rundown of what risks this patient has. I prefer natural thyroid. I've written articles on that, is that many patients do better on natural thyroid. And I would start with a low dose and, you know, see how the patient reacts. Most patients react well. Some don't. They feel like they're hypercaffeinated. They feel anxious. But many patients, paradoxically, report that they sleep better. Gee, you know, they take something that's supposed to be stimulating, yet they sleep deeper. Then they feel more relaxed with something that's supposed to be stimulating.
It's essentially fixing the problem of hypothyroid and making it more euthyroid, making it more normal, that you're able to sleep more deeply.
Yep.
So, and then, wow. Meyer, go see an integrative physician.
Yeah,
if you're here in New York, call Dr. Hoffman.
Or read one of the many books on that subject. The Thyroid Solution is a good one. But there's, I think, Amy Meyer. Amy Meyer wrote it. Yeah, I think she's a good spokesperson for the, I think, medically appropriate but somewhat unconventional use of thyroid medication, where sometimes people have normal thyroid values. On the other hand, there's some people who have abnormal thyroid values. They look like they need thyroid, but we don't give them thyroid because they seem to be okay. It's not like you have to. It's if the patient's doing fine, you don't need to. Okay. So there you have it. I think that wraps up today's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We've had some great questions. Keep them coming. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send questions. Any final remarks, Layla?
Oh, no. It's just been very we see this all too often about the low thyroid and not having it treated. And finally, they'll come see you, Dr. Hoffman, and voila.
Yeah. It can be life
problem solved.
Yep. You know, it's in life, you know, a door unopened is an opportunity not realized. And it can really make a difference.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla. And this is, of course, the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.